Voyage to Nowhere.
Odysseus, though canny and shrewd and hardly adverse to murder and mayhem, was not as barbaric as his brothers in arms when it came to enslaving captive women. Though he allowed his men the evil, he took only the riches he'd seized during the destruction of the hated people who took the lives of so many of his men. Odysseus was the only one of the Achaeans who did not carry away a member of the fair sex as a concubine. He missed his wife, Penelope, and his son, whom he had not seen in many months, and wanted to return to his kingdom on the Isle of Ithaca as quickly as the winds would take him. Leaving the burned-out city in his wake after making sacrifices to the gods, Odysseus set sail across the great green sea as friendly winds carried his small fleet of ships to the southwest and home. Several months later, after a vicious storm at sea, Odysseus, more dead than alive, struggled through the surf and crawled ashore on the island of the Phaeacians. Exhausted, he fell asleep in a pile of leaves near the beach, where he was later discovered by a princess, the daughter of Alcinous, king of the Phaeacians. Curious, she shook him to see if he was still alive. He woke and stared up at her, fascinated by her beauty. "In Delos once, I saw a gorgeous creature such as you." Smitten, Nausicaa led the castaway to the palace of her father, where Odysseus revealed himself as King of Ithaca and was royally received and respected. King Alcinous and his wife, Queen Arete, graciously offered Odysseus a ship to carry him home, but only after he promised to regale the king and his court with a narration of the great war and his adventures since leaving Ilium. A magnificent banquet was held in Odysseus's honor, and he readily agreed to tell the tale of his exploits and tragedy. "Soon after leaving Ilium," he began, "the winds turned contrary, and my fleet was driven far out to sea. After 10 days of turbulent waters, we finally made it to shore in a strange land. There, my men and I were treated with great warmth and friendliness by the natives who we called Lotus Eaters, because of the fruit from an unknown tree they ate that kept them in a constant state of euphoria. Some of my men began to consume the lotus fruit and soon became lethargic, no longer having a desire to sail home. Seeing that the homeward voyage might end then and there, I ordered them dragged back to the ships. We quickly raised our sails and rowed swiftly out to sea. Mistakenly believing I was far to the east, I sailed west, steering by the stars at night and the sun during its rise and fall. The fleet came to several islands swept by warm and constant rain that were thickly wooded. The islands were inhabited by a race of people who call themselves the Cyclops, lazy louts who raised large herds of sheep and goats. I took a party of men and searched for food supplies. On the side of a mountain, we came across a cave that acted as a stall with railings across the entrance to keep animals inside. Taking advantage of a gift from the gods, we began tying a herd of sheep and goats together for the journey to our ships. Suddenly, we heard the sounds of footsteps, and soon a huge mountain of a man filled the entrance. He entered and rolled a large rock into the opening before tending to his flock. We hid in the shadows, not daring to breathe. In time, he blew the smoldering embers of a fire pit into flame and saw us cringing in the rear of the cave. No man had a face uglier than the Cyclops, who had only one round eye as dark as the night. "Who are you?" he demanded. "Why have you invaded my home?" "We are not invaders," I answered. "We came ashore in our boats to fill our casks with water." "You came to steal my sheep," the giant thundered. "I shall call my friends and neighbors. Soon hundreds will come and we will boil and eat you all." Although we were Achaean warriors who had fought a long and hard war, we knew we would soon be vastly outnumbered. I found a long, narrow log penning in his sheep and sharpened the end into a sharp point with my sword. Then I held up the goat skin full of wine and said to him, "Look here, Cyclops, here is a wine offering to let us live." "What is your name?" he demanded. "My mother and father called me No Man." "What kind of a stupid name is that?" Without a word, the ugly monstrosity drank the whole goatskin and became very drunk within a very short time, and fell into a drunken stupor. I quickly snatched up the long log and ran at the sleeping giant, embedding the sharpened point into his one and only eye. Screaming in agony, he staggered outside, pulled the point from his eye, and shouted for help. His neighboring Cyclops heard him screaming and came to investigate. They shouted, "Are you being attacked?" He cried in reply, "I am being attacked by no man." Thinking he was crazy, they went back to their homes. We ran from the cave and to our ships. I shouted insults at the sightless giant. "Thank you for the gift of your sheep, you stupid Cyclops. And when your friends ask you how you injured your eye, tell them it was Odysseus, the king of Ithaca, who outsmarted you." "Were you then shipwrecked before you landed her in Phaeacia?" asked the good king. Odysseus shook his head. "Not for many long months." He took a drink of wine before continuing. "Carried far to the west by prevailing currents and winds, we found land and dropped anchor off the island called Aeolia. Here lived the good king Aeolus, son of Hippotas and dear to the gods. He had 6 daughters and 6 lusty sons, so he induced his sons to marry his daughters. They all lived together, constantly feasting and enjoying every conceivable luxury. Resupplied by the good king, we soon sailed on into rough seas. On the 7th day, after the seas had calmed, we reached the harbor of the city of the Laestrygonians. Navigating the narrow entrance between 2 rocky headlands, my fleet dropped anchor. Thankful to be on firm ground again, we began exploring the countryside and met a fair maiden who was fetching water. When asked who their king might be, she directed us to her father's house. But when we arrived there, we found the wife to be a huge giantess the size of a great tree, and we were dumbstruck at the ghastly sight of her. She called her husband Antiphates, who was even larger than she and twice the size of the Cyclops. Horrified at such a monstrosity, we ran back to our ships. But Antiphates raised the alarm, and soon thousands of sturdy Laestrygonians appeared like a forest and cast rocks at us from huge slings atop the cliffs. Not mere stones, but boulders almost as large as our ships. My ship was the only one that escaped the onslaught. All the others in my fleet were sunk. My men were thrown into the harbor, where the Laestrygonians speared them like fish before dragging their bodies ashore, robbing and then eating them. Within minutes, my ship reached open water and safety, but with great sadness. Not only were our friends and comrades gone, but so were the ships carrying all the treasure we had looted from Ilium. The vast amount that was our share of the Dardanian gold lay on the bottom of the Laestrygonian harbor. Sick with grief, we sailed ever onward until we came to the Aeaean island of Circe, home of the renowned and lovely queen revered as a goddess. Smitten by the charms of the beautiful and fair-tressed Circe, I became friends with her, lingering in her company for 3 circuits of the moon. I found myself wanting to stay longer, but my men insisted we resume our journey to our homes in Ithaca, or they would sail without me. Circe tearfully agreed to my leave, but implored me to make one more journey. "You must sail to the house of Hades and consult those who have passed on. They will guide you in understanding death, and when you continue your voyage, beware of the song of the sirens, for they will surely lure you and your men to death on their island of rocks. Close your ears so you do not hear their lilting songs. Once free of the sirens' temptation, you will sail past the rocky crags called the Wanderers. Nothing, not even a bird, can pass over them. Every ship except one that tried to pass the Wanderers met its doom, leaving nothing but wreckage and bodies of sailors." "And the vessel that got through?" I inquired. "The famous Jason, and his ship, the Argonaut." "And then we'll sail calm seas?" Circe shook her head. "Then you will come to a second mountain of rocks that runs to the sky, whose sides are as polished as a glazed urn and impossible to climb. There in the middle is a cavern, where Scylla, a dreadful monster, strikes terror on any who come near her. She has 6 long, snake-like necks, extremely long, with frightful heads containing jaws, with 3 rows of teeth that can crush a human to death in an instant. Beware that she throws out her heads and snatches members of your crew. Row fast, or all of you will surely die. Then you must pass the waters where Charybdis lurks, a great whirlpool that will suck your ship into the depths. Time your passage when it is asleep. Bidding Circe a tearful farewell, we took our places in the ship and began beating the sea with our oars. You truly sailed to the underworld? Murmured King Alcinous's lovely queen, her face pale. Yes, I followed Circe's instructions, and we sailed toward Hades and its frightful place of the dead. In 5 days' time, we found ourselves in a thick mist as we entered the waters of the river Oceanus that flowed beside the end of the world. The sky had vanished, and we were in a perpetual darkness the rays of the sun can never penetrate. We ran the ship ashore. I disembarked alone and walked through the eerie light until I came to a vast cavern in the side of a mountain. Then I sat back and waited. Soon the spirits began assembling, uttering terrible moaning sounds. I was nearly stunned senseless when my mother appeared. I did not know she had died, for she was still alive when I left for Ilium. My son, she murmured in a low voice, why do you come to the abode of darkness while you are still alive? Have you yet to reach your home in Ithaca? With tears in my eyes, I related to her the nightmare voyages and the terrible loss of my warriors during the voyage home from Ilium. I died of a broken heart, fearing I would never see my son again. I wept at her words and tried to embrace her, but she was like a wisp of nothing, and my arms came empty with only a vapor. They came in bands, men and women I had once known and respected. They came, recognized me, and nodded silently before returning to the cavern. I was surprised to see my old comrade, King Agamemnon, our commander at Ilium. Did you die at sea? I asked. No. My wife and her lover attacked me with a band of traitors. I fought well, but succumbed from overwhelming numbers. They murdered Cassandra, daughter of Priam, as well. Then came noble Achilles with Patroclus and Ajax, who asked about their families, but I could tell them nothing. We talked of old times until they too returned to the underworld. The ghosts of other friends and warriors stood beside me, each telling his own tale of melancholy. I had seen so many of the dead, my heart filled with overflowing sadness. Finally, I could see no more and left that pitiful place and boarded my ship. Without looking back, we sailed through the shroud of mist until we were touched by the sun again and set a course for the Sirens. Did you sail past the Sirens without distress? Inquired the king. We did, he answered. But before we attempted to run the gauntlet, I took a large wad of wax and cut it up in pieces with my sword. Then I kneaded the pieces until they were soft and used them to plug the ears of my crew. I ordered them to tie me to the mast and ignore my pleadings to change course, or we would surely run ashore onto the rocks. The Sirens began their enchanted singing as soon as they saw our ship start to pass their island of rocks. Come to us and listen to the sweetness of our song, renowned Odysseus. Hear our melody and come into our arms, for you will be charmed and wiser. The music and the sound of their voices was so hypnotic, I begged my men to change course for them, but they only bound me tighter to the mast and quickened their stroke until the Sirens could be heard no more. Only then did they remove the wax from their ears and untie me from the mast. Once past the rocky island, we encountered great waves and the loud roaring of the sea. I exhorted the men to row harder as I steered the ship through the turbulence. I did not tell them of the terrible monster Scylla, or they would have stopped rowing and huddled in fear together in the hold. We came to the rock-bound straits and entered the swirling waters of the Charybdis that swept us into a vortex of misery. We felt as if we were in a cyclone within a cauldron. While we were expecting each moment to be our last, Scylla pounced down from above, her viperous head snatching 6 of my finest warriors. I heard their despairing cries as they were pulled into the sky, crushed by jaws filled with sharp teeth, their arms stretched out to me in mortal agony as they screamed in horror. It was the most horrendous sight I witnessed throughout the awful voyage. Escaping out to sea, thunderbolts began shattering the sky. Lightning struck the ship, filling it with the smell of sulfur. The terrible force burst the ship into pieces, throwing the crew into the raging waters, where they quickly drowned. I managed to find part of the mast with a large leather thong wrapped around it that I used to tie my waist to a section of the fractured keel. Getting astride my makeshift raft, I was carried out to sea, drifting where the wind and current chose to take me. Many days later, barely still alive, my raft became stranded on the island of Ogygia, home of Calypso, a woman of great seductive beauty and intelligence, and the sister of Circe. Four of her subjects found me on the beach and carried me to her palace, where she took me in and nursed me back to full health. For a while I lived happily on Ogygia, lovingly cared for by Calypso, who slept by my side. We dallied in a fabulous garden with four fountains that sent their waters spraying in opposite directions. Lush forests with flocks of colorful birds flying among the branches abounded on the island. Clear, pure springs ran through quiet meadows bordered by flourishing grapevines. "How long did you spend with Calypso?" queried the king.
7 long months.
"Why did you not simply find a boat and sail away?" asked Queen Arete. Odysseus shrugged.
"Because there was no boat to be found on the island."
"Then how did you finally leave?"
Kind, gentle Calypso knew of my sorrow. She woke me one morning and spoke of her wish that I return home. She offered up the tools, took me into the forest, and helped me cut the wood to make a seaworthy raft. She sewed sails for me from cowhides and provisioned the raft with food and water. After 5 days, I was ready to depart. I was saddened by her emotional cries of pain in letting me go. She was a woman among women, one all men desire. If I hadn't loved Penelope more, I would have gladly stayed. Odysseus paused, and a tear came to one eye. I fear she died of grief in the lonely days that followed my leave.
"What happened to your raft?" wondered Nausicaa. "You were cast away when I found you."
17 calm days at sea ended when the sea suddenly raged in wrath. A violent storm with driving rain and sweeping gusts tore the sail away. This disaster was followed by great waves that battered my fragile craft until it barely hung together. I drifted for 2 days before I was finally washed up on your shore, where you, sweet and lovely Nausicaa, found me. He paused. "And so ends my tale of hardship and woe."
Everyone in the palace had sat enthralled by Odysseus's incredible saga. Presently, King Alcinous rose and addressed his guest.
"We are honored to have such a distinguished guest in our midst, and owe you a great debt for entertaining us in so wondrous a manner. Therefore, in grateful appreciation, my fastest ship and crew are yours to carry you to your home in Ithaca."
Odysseus expressed his gratitude, and he felt humble for such generosity. But he was anxious to be on his way.
"Farewell, good King Alcinous, and gracious Queen Arete, and to your daughter Nausicaa for her kindness. Be happy in your house, and may you always be graced by the gods." Then Odysseus crossed the threshold and was escorted to the ship. With a fair wind and a friendly sea, Odysseus finally arrived in his kingdom on the Isle of Ithaca, where he was reunited with his son Telemachus. There, too, he found his wife Penelope besieged by suitors, and he slew them all.
And so ends the story of the Odyssey, an epic that has lived on for centuries, inflaming the wonder and imaginations of all who have read it or listened to it. Except that it isn't quite true. Or at least, only some of it is true. For Homer was not a Greek. Nor did the Iliad and the Odyssey take place where the legends placed them. The real story of Odysseus's adventures is something else entirely, and it would not be revealed until much, much later.